from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
We're going to be spending a fair amount of time with each other this evening if you keep it locked right here to KMOX. Welcome in to a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. I have you till 8 o'clock. A little bit after 8 o'clock, we'll jump into a Cardinals pregame, and then they've got their first pitch tonight against the Dodgers at 9:10. Cardinals pregame will officially start at 8:15. So we have a full 2-hour Gray Bar Sports Open Line leading into Cardinals baseball tonight. As always, if you'd like to join the program, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900 and or tweeting at me at Matt Pauley on air. We got a good number of guests that are going to be coming up on the program today. James Wessling is going to join us in less than 10 minutes. ESPN college sports broadcaster. We'll talk all things NCAA basketball with him, especially after a huge win for Illinois yesterday in the Sweet 16 as they advance to the Elite Eight. They knock off Iowa State yesterday, 72-69. We'll talk City SC soccer with Max Bratos. He's going to be on the call for Apple TV for City coming up this weekend. Next hour, our good friend Tamar Scher from Channel 4 is going to join us, and also author Clayton Truder is going to join us next hour as well. So we've got a lot coming up. Obviously, a lot of Cardinals to get to. Not a great day yesterday. We certainly talked about that a lot here on this program and the post-game show yesterday. Our friend Katie Wu from The Athletic was on the Foul Territory show today, and she had a fantastic line. She called yesterday's game a tribute video to the 2023 season. And in many ways, it was that, because the way the Cardinals lost yesterday was incredibly similar to the way they lost many of their games last season. So what does that cause fans to do? And I'm not even saying like fans are wrong. Like I understand the reaction. The reaction from fans was a, here we go again. Because yesterday looked no different than last season. So for a fan base that was already somewhat pessimistic about this team and not real excited about not the moves they made, but maybe the moves they didn't make, if that makes sense, you sit down and you watch or you listen to yesterday's game, and it is, like Katie said, a tribute video to what happened last year. And I think there's some frustration there. I don't think this team is going to be a tribute video to last season all year. I have some level of belief in this team. My belief in this team is that they are good enough to contend to win the division. And I would pick them to win the division. Not a great division. Yesterday, the division took a hit when Justin Steele went down for the Cubs. And we're still waiting. I haven't seen anything today on how long that's going to be, but it's an IL for sure. It didn't look good. It was a non-contact injury when he went down. Yeah, I thought the Cubs were probably the second when my preseason pick of the division, not that it really matters for much, was Cardinals, Cubs, Reds, Brewers, Pirates. If the Cubs don't have Steele for an extended amount of time, I might look at the Cubs like a fourth place team. Like that, he is that important. I don't know if he's as important to the Cubs as Sonny Gray is to the Cardinals, but there are some similarities to that. This Cardinals team, if they do not have Sonny Gray for an extended amount of time this year, and missing the first 2 weeks of the year is not an extended amount of time. If they don't have Sonny Gray for an extended amount of time this year, then they could be in a little bit of trouble. And I think the Justin Steele news and what went down yesterday, and really every team in the division has a player like that or a situation like that. It's just not that good of a division. And we'll see what happens Haven't seen anything today yet on Justin Steele. The Cubs aren't playing today. They've got one of those, the off day after the first day of the season. So unless one of the reporters broke something, which I haven't seen anything on Twitter, we'll learn more about that situation coming up tomorrow. We'll give you an opportunity coming up later on in the program to talk through what's going on with the Cardinals. But Zach Thompson on the mound tonight, I'm excited to see him. I feel like of everybody in the rotation to start the season, he's the guy who has the potential to maybe be a lot better than we expect him to be, or just based off previous performances, able to take a step forward. He's a young guy, good spring, profiles with swing and miss stuff. This is somebody that if he can take multiple steps forward for this season, that could be a game changer for this Cardinals team. But we'll talk much more about that coming up later on the program. We'll talk college basketball, though, with James Wessling. He joins us in just a moment or so. Don't go anywhere. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
This is America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Rebound Shannon, down to 1 second. We got a putback as King took it away and put it in. Doesn't matter. Midnight has struck for Iowa State. The Illini release.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. We take you until 8 o'clock this evening, and then we get out of here for Cardinals baseball. Second game of the season tonight for the Cardinals. They match up against the Dodgers, but let's talk some college basketball. Big night last night for the University of Illinois. They are headed to the Elite Eight. They get a win over Iowa State. A lot of other things happening last night as well. And to talk all things NCAA tournament, we're very happy to welcome on to the program someone you see broadcasting college sports on ESPN. He is James Wessling. You follow him on Twitter at James Wessling. James, always appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. I know we did this around this time last year, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm glad that you offered to have me back. I'm excited to visit with you.
Yeah, great to be able to talk. And for folks locally here in St. Louis, there's a lot of excitement about what happened yesterday with Illinois. They get out to that big lead against Iowa State, give Iowa State credit. They fight their way back, but then Illinois's got enough. What did you think of the effort from the Fighting Illini last night?
Yeah, well, I think this is just a really good, well-rounded basketball team. I think you described kind of the ebbs and flows of the game pretty perfectly. Iowa State's a team that, you know, they're never going to stop fighting. And really, they were kind of the big story coming into the tournament because of what they did to Houston in the Big 12 championship. I think a lot of people that were filling out brackets had Iowa State as being a team that could threaten UConn for a Final Four berth. And it turns out that, you know, I think a lot of people missed the mark on just how good this Illinois team is. Obviously, Terrence Shannon is a bucket getter. I mean, 23.5 points per game. But Domask has a really nice mid-range game. Hawkins is a guy that's just so incredibly versatile. He's a matchup nightmare. And the other thing is this team is veteran laden. You know, their top four scorers are seniors. And in this day and age of NIL and transfer portal and one and dones, I think it speaks volumes about veteran basketball teams and just how deep they can go in the tournament when they're connected. And that's the thing that stands out to me when I look at this Illinois team is they're older, they're connected, and they've got a great coach in Brad Underwood.
Yeah, speaking of Brad Underwood, how important was it? Because his run at Illinois has had some really good teams, but some short stays in the NCAA tournament. Feels like this is important for him to finally have an extended stay in the tournament.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, I think his best teams obviously went out earlier than anticipated. And I think that, you know, the fan base had to give Brad some room to operate and had to stay somewhat patient. I mean, it took him 3 years before he had a team that was competitive, and he didn't make the tournament until his fourth year at Illinois. And, you know, since then he's been in the field. They've been fairly highly seeded, but like you said, have maybe failed to live up to their seed line. And this year, obviously that's not the case. You know, this is a team that I think will compete with UConn, certainly more than San Diego State did the other night. And that's not saying much since it was a 30-point blowout. But I think Illinois can hang in that game. And he's got 29 wins this season. You know, he the most he had at Stephen F. Austin was you know 32 and 29. So he's had a really good season. I think it says a lot, not only about Illinois, but I think the Big Ten kind of needed a run from somebody different than their usual cast of characters. And so it's been really fun to watch, and I think good to see for Brad and the fans and the conference as well.
Speaking of UConn, they just haven't been they weren't really tested in last year's tournament, and here they are winning games by 39, 17, and 30 so far in this tournament. You said that Illinois can maybe give them a run, but, I mean, right now it just seems like they are the team that's just rolling through everybody.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, I watch them, and they look so dominant on television and in person. You look at their team, and it's hard to fathom how they're this good. You know, they don't have any, you know, top five, top 10 recruits on this roster. I mean, they have a freshman in Castle that was, you know, he was a five-star recruit. But outside of that, everybody else were, you know, mid-40s, 50s, even the 60s and 70s in terms of their recruiting rankings. So my point is, he's just built a really deep, solid team, and I think they're incredibly well coached. I mean, you talk about what Dan Hurley's mm-hmm. been able to do. I just think he's almost in a way underrated in terms of his pedigree and just how talented he is as a coach. I mean, he is an elite coach. And they're just a team that they don't have any weaknesses. You know, they're not a team that blows you away on paper. Like I said, their top scorer's Tristan Newton at 15 a night, but they're balanced. They don't make mistakes, and they are just crushing people. We haven't seen a tournament run in back-to-back years like this in as long as I can remember. The way that they're destroying teams, it's definitely unique, and I think something that we won't see happen again for a really long time.
The entire kind of arc of UConn basketball is interesting because obviously Calhoun was there for a long time, then Kevin Ollie comes in and does a really nice job, but gets fired, and you think maybe that program's on the way down, and Hurley gets there, and it does not take any time at all for him to just have that thing right back as a national championship contender.
Yeah, it's a good point. Kevin Ollie was a really unique story because, as you noted, he takes over for Jim Calhoun. You know, Jim Calhoun wins a championship in 2011 with Kemba Walker and company. Spends one more season at the helm after that, then he retires. Kevin Ollie takes over, wins 20 games his first year. Then as a 7 seed in the tournament, wins the whole thing in 2014 with Shabazz Napier and that tournament run that they had that was incredible. And then the program kind of fell off, to your point, and Dan Hurley's been able to revive it in a really short amount of time. You know, this team obviously is a 4 seed last year, and last year was unique because they were by far the best team in college basketball in the non-conference. Remember, they were just destroying blue bloods. They were number one in the country. And then they had a bunch of injuries. They went 13-7 in the Big East, and everybody forgot about them. Well, they got healthy again right before the tournament, and they were back to that kind of non-conference December form that we saw at that point in time and were even better. And that's just carried over to this season. They're a really, really unique basketball team, and it'll be tough for anybody to take them down. But when you look at their path, their first 3 games in the tournament, they haven't seen anybody even remotely as close as Illinois in terms of talent level. So that's what stands out to me. I mean, they're not beating up on, you know, mid-majors anymore. They're going to have a tough test in Illinois. And then I think the other side of that bracket with Alabama and Clemson are two programs that are also really, really talented teams. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Did either of those games yesterday, technical upsets with Alabama beating a 1 seed in North Carolina and Clemson beating a 2 seed in Arizona, did either of those games overly surprise you?
No, they didn't. I had a Clemson game back in December, and I remember after that game saying, this looks like a team that, you know, will be in the Sweet 16. This looks like a potential, you know, top 10 team. But kind of like UConn last year, they had injuries. Once they got into ACC play and they really limped into the NCAA tournament, they got upset in the ACC tournament. You know, they dropped a couple seed lines. They have double-digit losses. But they look like, once again, the team that I saw and it wasn't even non-conference. I had their game against Pitt back in December when they were just really balanced, guarded really hard. They can shoot it. They're big. And so I wasn't shocked by their win over Arizona, especially watching what they did to Baylor. And the same for Alabama for very different reasons, though. I mean, Alabama's one of the not only the top scoring team in the country this year, but they're one of the highest scoring offenses we've seen in the last decade. They average 90 points per game. I mean, you think about going through a conference season in the SEC, any night that they're held to 75, they're turning around and scoring 95 or 100 or even more. So, you know, I knew that they could keep up with North Carolina in terms of just putting the ball in the basket. I had questions about their defense, and sure enough, in a game that looked like a 6 a.m. rec league pickup game at the YMCA, they were able to get stops down the stretch when it mattered most. And so, you know, I think Alabama kind of reminds me a little bit of UConn last year, just in terms of putting all the pieces together right around tournament time, you know, kind of ratcheting up their defense. They've got guys that can score. It just comes down to will they be able to get stops?
Couple more minutes with ESPN college basketball broadcaster James Wessling. Four games going on tonight. They're all kind of unique in their own way. NC State, Marquette, Gonzaga, Purdue, Duke, Houston, Creighton matched up against Tennessee. And the only game that maybe has the possibility of really being one side is that Marquette matchup. But NC State, they've obviously gone on a really good run. They're kind of the Cinderella that's still there. I like this slate of games tonight. Do you agree?
I do too. And you know, what makes this entire tournament unique is it's a complete opposite of what we saw last year. Last year, you had a 9 seed Florida Atlantic in the Final Four. You had a San Diego State team in the Final Four. And this year's tournament has been a lot of chalk. But what you get is you get really incredible Sweet 16 and Elite Eight and Final Four games, just in terms of competitiveness and athletes and finishes. And, you know, the last 11 NCAA tournaments, 10 of the last 11, we've seen a team seeded 7 or lower make the Final Four. There's only one team in the Sweet 16 that's 7 or lower, and it's NC State, seeded 11. So you've got all the top seeds, for the most part, still left. You've got really good teams. I don't think NC State makes it to the Final Four, and so I think this will be the second tournament in the last 12 years that we've seen teams seeded 6 or better in the Final Four. I think the winner of Houston Duke goes to the Final Four, and I think the winner of Purdue Gonzaga goes to the Final Four. Just in terms of what I've seen so far, Purdue and Gonzaga both look dominant. I know Houston survived a scare against Texas A&M. But Houston was not healthy. You know, Juwan Roberts is healing up. He's played, but he hasn't been 100%. And you knew Texas A&M is a 9 seed. They wanted that game more than anybody else. In-state, not really rivalry, but in terms of proximity, they're really close. And it was a great game. But the fact that Houston survived, I'll be interested to see if that kind of takes their game to another level. Now that, you know, they kind of can catch their breath. They survived the big upset bid, and now they get a blue blood in Duke. And that's the game that I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, everybody talks about loving the Cinderellas and the upsets and everything, but when we get to this point, and TV ratings are going to show it, you're right. You want to see the blue bloods in there. And the potential Elite Eight matchups, you know, a Marquette-Houston game, a Purdue-Tennessee game, depending on how things go, not only is it going to be great games tonight, but you're right. I mean, it's just you're going to see some really, really good Elite Eight games as well.
Right, and that was the thing last year. Nobody knew anything about the teams in the Final Four. You know, Auburn was there as a 5 seed. UConn was there as a 4 seed. When you get to, like you said, this point, sure, the Loyola Chicago's are a fun story, and FAU, Florida Atlantic, is a fun story, and Butler back in the day with Gordon Haywood and Brad Stevens as their coach, they were always fun to watch year in and year out. But for the most part, and like you said, the ratings will show this, people want to see teams and players that they recognize. They want to see the best college athletes in the world competing, and I think that's what we have, you know, so far. And I think, like you said, we are in for four really, really good games once again tonight.
He is James Wessling, superb play-by-play broadcaster at ESPN. James, always appreciate you taking some time with us. We'll talk again real soon.
That sounds good. Thanks, Matt.
That's James Wessling joining us here on the program. We'll come back and we'll talk with another broadcaster. Max Brados is going to be on the call on Apple TV for City SC and Real Salt Lake coming up this weekend. We'll get his thoughts on the game. That's up next as we roll on with the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it here on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We have you till 8 o'clock this evening, and then I'm going to be sticking around because I've got you for Cardinals pregame tonight. Cardinals playing their second game of the season tonight as they match up against the Dodgers. Coming up this weekend in action tomorrow, City SC, they are back at it. They are on the road to take on Real Salt Lake, and on the call of that game, part of the team at Apple TV and MLS Season Pass, it is Max Brados, and he joins us right now on the program. Max, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Matt, I'm doing great. Always nice to talk St. Louis City matchups. Great. Always looking forward to getting back out there to St. Louis at some point here this season too.
Yeah, let's. It's been an interesting run here recently for City. They haven't won a lot, but they haven't lost a lot either. Before we even get into that, the referee strike coming to an end or lockout coming to an end, the labor piece is now there. There's been a lot of talk about what impact the replacement officials may or may not have had on games. What are your thoughts on this as we're going to see the regular MLS officials back officiating games?
Well, it's great news, and I think a moment to think about the replacement officials who were in a tough spot. You know, no one wants to really get into those kind of situations, but you know, they were required to keep action going. I think there is any situation where the MLS season could not move forward, and all in all, did a pretty adequate job. Obviously, there were some things that didn't align, and there were some games that you certainly could point at that had some discrepancies, but. It was an interesting group because that referee of replacements came from all over the world, from Mexico and Italy, and some were retired and they kind of pieced it together. But I'm a big fan of our officials that are now whole coming back. So it's a tough job because, you know, we have 14 games a weekend generally, and that's more than any other league. So you're really stretched. And just like with players and coaches here in the United States and North America, we're up against it to find enough to fill out the coffers in every sense of the sport here. So we need all the help we can get. So I'm glad they're great people and they work really hard and they travel a lot. And I know they've stayed in really good shape during this break. I saw a lot of the officials doing international games during that international window. So it's going to be good to see them back at it because we always are at the same hotel. So we grab a coffee with the referees all the time. They're good peeps.
There's some similarities to NFL officials just in the generally. I know sometimes they play midweek games, but it's mostly one game a week. Where in other sports, basketball, hockey, whatever, guys are working every single night. So it's always tough when you've got one weekend. Or one game a week and you're trying to figure that out compared to your full-time job. If you have another full-time job, it's a tough lot. You make the point about the travel. They do put a lot of travel in, and it's a tough thing that they are asked to do.
Yeah. And they have other jobs. They, it should be fully professional, which it's getting towards that. They are consumed in soccer. When you look at whoever it might be or that group of officials that we get every time, they'll pick up international games, but they're in the world of football. They are officiating games at other levels all the time, and they are fully immersed into the laws. I mean, just keep in mind, there's a lot of new wrinkles and laws with the MLS avant-garde ones that no other league is doing. So, I mean, that puts more pressure on them because they have to execute them. So, I mean, I've gone through the rule book, and granted, I'm not an official, but man, it's intimidating. And now they add more to it, and they're becoming more transparent because for so long, officials could, you know, there was no VAR. We have this thing now where they would normally stop the clock in stadium when it hit 45 or 90 minutes. Now they let it go so that fans know what's going on. And I think I really support it. There's going to be some hiccups along the way, but it's just to remind you, it's a tough job, but these guys are immersed in the sport. They live for the sport, and it's they're a good representation for the league. It's going to be interesting the first week and first 2 weeks to see him getting getting back into the rhythm, because this was a pretty traumatic situation for all of them. Who knew when it was going to end? They never thought probably that the stoppage would happen, and it has. And now, you know, and there's going to be some things that everyone's going to have to repair along the way, because officials coming back with the coaches and certainly with the players, and develop those relationships so they can catch up to speed before too long.
It has certainly been an interesting few weeks for City. They have three straight ties as they're still unbeaten, but they have not won a game in about a month or so. They'll match up again on the road against Real Salt Lake coming up tomorrow. That's the game that you've got the broadcast on. What jumps out at you about what City has done here over the last few weeks, as they haven't won, but they also haven't lost?
Well, one thing that I think is different from a year ago is that there's been a couple games, including their opponent this weekend, where they were trailing, and they've come back. And I think with the way that St. Louis plays, it's kind of the situation that if you can get up on the St. Louis City, you have a really good shot of winning, because they can't really implement their style like you would. You might be able to be a little bit more protective. You might be able to play a lower block to prevent their high press. So, I mean, really, with the way they play, if you fall behind a game, it really limits your chances for success. But they've had comebacks in a couple games against Austin, against Real Salt Lake, against D.C. United, where they trailed. I think that's a really good sign. And I think the fact that, granted, they only have one win, and that's not where they would like to be, but that they're very hard to beat. I'm a big believer in soccer that if you can make your team hard to beat and you're not tasting defeat on a regular basis, that's good habit forming. Overall, the St. Louis team, look, they haven't gotten the respect they deserve. And even after the great season, everyone, including myself, I go, maybe they're going to come down a rung. And they might. But they're still so competitive, and they're in these games home and away, that they deserve that respect. And I spoke to Bradley Carnell, and he even said that. He goes, teams now respect us, and they don't like playing against them, not only because of that pressing style, but I was watching the D.C. game. I watched the game against the New York City earlier, and they were so physical. It is so demanding. I mean, they get after. They got red cards against some teams. They can really be a tough out, and nobody wants to play them. I can tell you that.
You kind of allude to it, but does it feel different the way they play compared to last year?
There is some nuance to it, and they keep people on their toes. I mean, sometimes they'll play with a single striker. Sometimes they'll play with two. They rotate a lot of guys in, and they have a situation where they want to build competition, and Bradley Carnell has been pretty explicit about that. So they know you've got to train well, and you've got to really compete, and you've got to be committed to what they're able to do. I think the addition of Chris Durkin is a perfect player. He is just tough as nails. No one runs more than him in this league. And I think they really, you know, struck out. That's a terrible analogy. They hit a home run with Chris Durkin. And in addition, that was part of the trade where they played D.C. and they had Jared Stroud and Lucas Bartlett, their former players, which is a nice piece of history for St. Louis. But I think that makes them very interesting. I also wanted to add that, you know, without the injured players, Tim Parker and Edouard Leuven, they build a lot on set pieces, and Leuven's that key guy. And Bradley Carnell pointed out to us as well when we talked to him earlier this week, we have to rely on set pieces. And he was very pleased that without Edouard Leuven, he had three different guys taking corner kicks and free kicks, and they were able to get something out of it. So a lot of things are clicking. But this is a tough one. They're playing a tough Real Salt Lake team. But I think you have to be optimistic if you're a St. Louis City supporter, which I know everyone listening is, because they love their soccer out there.
Well, Leuven is officially ruled out, as is Nilsson for the game. Tim Parker goes as questionable, continuing to deal with that back issue. I'd be somewhat surprised if he played, but from a long, you know, term perspective, it does seem like Parker's will be back sooner than later, and obviously that's an important thing for this team.
100%, because Nilsson is, as you said, Nilsson's not there. But Josh Yarrow's been, I mean, these guys just step up, and, you know, the next man up philosophy. So I would never underestimate who would be that next man up, because they have a really good core group of guys. And when you least expect it, Celio Pompeo is a great example. he was a guy that was kind of on the fringes, and now he looks like a real contributor, a guy that can not only play for St. Louis and play well, but play for a lot of MLS clubs. And that was a guy that was on anybody's radar at the beginning of 2023. So St. Louis kind of building their own fortune, hardworking team, and they've maintained that identity, which is very optimistic.
Max Bredos is going to be on the call tomorrow. He and Brian Dunseth are going to be doing the broadcast. Max, have a wonderful broadcast, a great rest of the Easter weekend. Thank you for taking some time, and hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
I would love that, Matt, anytime. I love talking St. Louis City, and this is actually going to be a really nice game. So check it out on Apple TV on MLS Season Pass. Two teams, you know, with the bit between their teeth that have had some really good moments in the early season.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Max.
Thanks, buddy.
That's Max Bredos joining us here on the program. We'll jump into Cardinals baseball, jump back into Cardinals baseball would be the better way to say that, as we talk through what to make of the first game of the season. Is there anything to make of it? We'll discuss coming up in just a moment as we roll on. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Just a couple minutes left in hour number one of the program. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. We've got one more hour to go in the 7 o'clock hour. We are set to be joined by Tamar Scher, Channel 4. She's going to be involved in a very, very cool event. We'll tell you all about that. Also, Clayton Truder, an author of a book that looks back at some legendary college basketball coaches who their origin story really traces back to the Boston area. It's really a kind of an interesting footnote in the history of college basketball. He's going to join us coming up at about 7:35 or so. So that's going to be coming up later on in the program. Cardinals have announced their lineup for today. And if you filled out your scorebook yesterday but then ended up not keeping score, you're in good shape, because you can just use that bad boy again. It looks exactly the same as it did yesterday. Brendan Donovan, he's going to lead things off. He is in left field today. Paul Goldschmidt, who was the Cardinals' offense yesterday, going 3-for-4 with a home run, accounting for every single run, one, that the Cardinals scored. Really, it was his three-hit day with a home run and Victor Scott's stolen base. That was what the Cardinals did from an offensive standpoint yesterday. Nolan Gorman will bat third. He is at second base. The other Nolan, Arenado, he bats fourth at third. Wilson Contreras catching again. He's batting fifth. Alec Burleson, he's the DH, batting sixth, batting seventh. Jordan Walker in right field. Victor Scott, the second, is in the eighth spot in center field. And Mason Wynn is the shortstop, batting ninth. And it's going to be Zach Thompson on the mound, as Thompson is, again, huge opportunity for him. It's going to be the 11th start of his career. Last year, he made 10 starts, pitching to a 4.48 ERA. And again, this is just a chance for a guy who's been coming up through the organization, has kind of wobbled between being a starter and a reliever. This is the chance at the beginning of a season, after having a really nice spring, to show that you deserve to be in the starting rotation and force the Cardinals into a tough decision. Bobby Miller is going to be on the mound for the Dodgers. If you're not familiar with Miller, he's a right-hander who had a really nice rookie season last year. 22 games, 22 starts, 11 wins, a 3.76 ERA, 119 strikeouts and 124 innings. So that was a good first season for him last year, and he'll look to follow that up tonight. Again, first pitch at 9:10. That means our coverage begins at 8:15. First, we got a whole other hour of a Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Don't go anywhere. My name is Matt Pauley, taking you through a Friday night right here on KMOX.